I say so often, the practice field is more important than the Super Bowl. For if you're what you ought to be in the training time, the Super Bowl will take care of itself. The kitchen is more important than the dining room. For if you perform as you should perform in the kitchen, the meal will take care of itself. Spring training is more important to a baseball team than the World Series. Or if you're what you ought to be in spring training, the World Series will take care of itself. To a student, study hall is more important than examination time. Or if you're what you ought to be in the study hall, the examination time will take care of itself. You see, I was talking last night, one of our fine young men. We're talking about school spirit. School spirit, as I said to him, nobody ought to try to work up a school spirit. What you do is you put the right ingredients in the school, and then the spirit takes care of itself. Our job is not to get to a bunch of young people and say and cater to them so we can develop a school spirit. No, our job is to do what we're supposed to do. I mean, you do what you're supposed to do. My mama, I doubt if my mama ever one time tried to have a family spirit. She wailed the tar out of me time and time and time again. And that created a mighty good spirit. I used to tell years ago in a sermon I had, about an experience I had when I was a boy. We had a sissy in our class named Hugh Brewer. I'll never forget Hugh. He was a big, tall, gangly fella, redheaded, and that's nothing wrong being redheaded. I mean, but redheaded folks, as you know, are a bit dumber than the rest of us, there's nothing wrong with having red hair. But this guy was a sissy. I mean, he threw a ball like that, he caught it like that, and he shot a basketball like that. And so, we couldn't stand him. Old Hugh, everybody laughed at him. When we chose up baseball, he always was chosen last, and he always played right field. Remember those days? And he played right field. And we played basketball, he kept score, and we always beat up on Hugh. There was never a moment's peace around Hugh, because we knew we could lick him. We always beat up on him. We'd flip a coin, see who did it today. We had constant warfare. Hugh was in a fight every day, never won a fight, and never started to fight. We just knew that was one we could handle, and so we handled him quite often. And so one day, we did not know it, but Hugh's dad gave Hugh boxing lessons. We didn't understand that. We didn't know what was going on. So I was on the high school basketball team, and Hugh was, it's time for the junior high basketball team. And it's time for the basketball team to practice. And Hugh had the basketball, and he wasn't on the team. I mean, he couldn't even make the girls' team. He was absolutely ridiculous. And so I walked out on the court, time for us to practice, and I said, Hugh, ball. And that was always all necessary, and Hugh would obey us. But Hugh had been taking boxing lessons unbeknownst to me and us. And so Hugh that day kept the ball. And I said, Hugh, ball. And Hugh kept the ball. And so I said, Hugh, if I have to ask you one more time for the ball, I'm coming over to get it. And so he didn't give it to me, so I asked him one more time. And I went over, and I got it. Right in the nose. He hit me. If you want to know what Gabriel looks like, check with me. I saw Gabriel. From the floor looking up, Hugh didn't look near as big a sissy as he did straight in the eye. And I was looking up at Hugh, and Hugh said, "You want some more?" "Oh, no," I said, "I've had all I need." But you know what? You know, from that day forward, Hugh and I had a good spirit with each other. We never had a bad time. We had a wonderful spirit with each other. That's the way you develop a good spirit. You don't start at the end and say, "Okay, now we're going to have a good spirit." No, you don't do that. You do what you're supposed to do, and the good spirit takes care of itself. You know the homes that have good spirits, where the kids are taught to obey? Parents cater to the kids. Not a single one. Young ladies, you're not happy if you're catered to. You're happy if you have the security of the strength of a mom and dad who know what they're doing, And they see to it that you obey. That's the way you're happy. I have a statement I make. I have a sermon I preach to ladies sometimes. And it's called The Candle of the Lord. In that statement I say that nothing is ever happy unless it is with that thing for which it was made. Number two, nothing is ever happy unless that which is supposed to be subservient is obedient to the superior force. And that's his standard. No child's happy if the child is catered to. A child's happy when he has a parent that has authority and love and firmness and so forth. A child's happy. A church is happy. And don't misunderstand me. I'm not putting myself an example. But a church is happier when the church has a pastor who has some authority and says this is true and this is not true and this is right and this is wrong. And a country is happier. By the way, a country is happier when she has a president that says, this may not be very popular, but this is what I think is the thing to do. I admire Mr. Reagan tremendously in these days. I'm not saying I agree with everything he does, but I'm saying he's doing what he thinks is right, whether it's popular or whether it's unpopular. And so I'm saying that the honest truth is you don't get something by trying to get something. You do what's right and put the proper ingredients. You know, this is the day of doing things quickly. This is the day of shortcuts. Instant hot chocolate and ready mixed biscuits. And now I've seen some of these little things that come out of pop out of these cans. And Bill Harvey was eating in the house one day. And we had this little canned biscuits about the size of a Lord's Supper piece of bread, you know. And just about that full. And Bill said, whoa, these biscuits are good. These remind me of the ones that Mother used to open. And none of those is good. No, sir. You give me some old-fashioned biscuits about that big around and that rise about that high. And you put some old-fashioned cow butter in it. I don't mean it's a substitute butter. I mean the kind you milk out of the cow. And you put that butter in between that thing, and then you get some thickened gravy made from hot sausage, and you just put that over that, and you will never want Aunt Jemima or Ballard's anymore. You never will. No, sir. But this is the day of instant. This is the day of shortcuts. Everyone's shortcut. Dr. Evans in education. Take a test, and you want to take a course. If you can pass a certain test, I mean, you can jump a course. I hate that with a passion. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. There's more to going to school than learning a few facts. The fact that you jump a course doesn't mean you've got what you need to get. You need to sit under a teacher and learn some character and principles under a teacher. And that's one reason I don't think these young folks ought to graduate from high school at 13, 14 years of age. Oh, but you say, my child is 6 years ahead of the class. He may be in books, but he's probably retarded when it comes to knowing how to get along with people. And the truth is, a child ought to stay in school. And we have a rule in our college that the child under a certain age can't come to our college because there's some things you get besides what you get in the book. But these are days of I heard on the radio a program the other day. I was driving down the street, heard a radio broadcast, and they said, in this busy age, they said, in this busy age, most of us have a hard time having enough time to read the Bible. So we have this devotional book, and you can just take a few minutes a day, and you can get your spiritual depth. And you write and send a dollar or more, and we'll send it to you. It's not worth the dollar you send. You can't read to save time and read the Bible. The truth is, you can't really take a shortcut and get anywhere where you ought to be. Shortcuts are highly overrated. This matter of building churches, for example, preacher boys, building churches. These boys that go out of here, somebody said one time, said, if you have a church, start a church, and you don't have 300 in Sunday school the first year you're there, you're backslidden. Tell Adoniram Judson about that. He spent 7 years of faithfulness before he ever got anybody to listen to the gospel. And yet, he kept witnessing and kept witnessing and blazed the trail for others. Tell David Livingston about that. Somebody said, oh, if you'll just serve God, everything's going to turn out okay. Tell John the Baptist about that. They served him for supper one night on a platter in the king's palace. And, the truth is, these shortcuts, that's not the answer. Everybody wants a shortcut. Oh, I'll take, let me take, uh, uh, These courses by, and I'm not being critical of this now, but I don't care much about, in fact, Howells Anderson College doesn't have it. I have no plan of having it. Correspondence College working school, it doesn't appeal to me at all. Not at all. I'm not interested in having correspondence course. I want you to get it the real way. Go to school, be a freshman, be a sophomore, be a junior, and be a senior. Some of you folks are taking it a little ridiculous end, though. A sophomore for 6 years is too much, folks, and Stan over here has majored in freshman English, taken it 8 times. But I am saying that shortcuts, that's not it. But everybody wants a shortcut. There are no shortcuts to success. There are shortcuts to temporary flourishes. No shortcuts to success. None at all. You see, one of the most deadly things in America is this thing right here. Now, I travel, and so I have to use. You can't, for example, you can't rent a car if you got money anymore. You can't go up to a rental car in an airport and say, here's some money, I want to rent a car. You can't do it. They won't take your money. You can't get the car. You've got to have a credit card. But that credit card right there says, it says, I want to enjoy it now and suffer later. That's the whole philosophy. And that is the stupid philosophy on which America is built tonight. Enjoy it now and pay for it later and suffer later. Are you listening to me? I'm saying what you better do is count the cost. Now, what this represents is this. It represents a philosophy that is destroying this country. And by the way, it will destroy any person in this room tonight. If you want to enjoy it now and pay for it later, have it now and suffer later. Everything that is enjoyable in life comes by suffering. There's no enjoyment of life, none, that comes without suffering. This pulpit is here because a tree suffered. If you have on leather shoes, then your shoes are there because something suffered. You heard the old story, didn't you? It's old as Methuselah, but it's still cute. The chicken was talking to the hog, and the chicken said, you know, we've been a blessing to a lot of people. Think how many folks have enjoyed us at breakfast every morning. All the thousands and millions of people that, in fact, right now, it's morning time. Think about all the people that are enjoying ham or bacon and eggs right now. And God's been good to us to let us be a blessing to so many people. Yeah. Yes, said the hog to the chicken, we are a blessing to many people. But said, for you, it's just a contribution. To me, it's a real sacrifice. Now, the truth is, when you eat your breakfast tomorrow morning, something suffered. Every child, every person in this room, every child in that nursery was brought in this world because somebody had to travail. This big building you see here tonight is here because somebody travailed. Howells Anderson College is here because somebody travailed and somebody suffered and somebody sacrificed and somebody did without and somebody paid the price. And Hammond Baptist Schools are there because somebody suffered. And this church is here because somebody paid the price. Anytime you see a great work of God or rising above the others, you mark it down. Somebody spent the time and somebody shed the tears and somebody burnt the midnight oil and somebody paid the price. Any enjoyment in life is made possible by suffering. Now follow me. The right things that you enjoy always follow suffering. Did you hear me? The things that are right in life always follow suffering. The things that are wrong in life always precede suffering. For example, having a baby. The baby, suffering comes first. Having a baby comes after. In a career. There's a man back there who's always here. One of the finest men in this church. I admire him tremendously. His name is Vaughn Glover. Vaughn Glover is you don't know it, but he is an author. He writes novels, clean, good, clean Western novels for Western magazines. I mean national Western magazines. And Vaughn Glover is somebody. He has one of the finest pens you've ever seen. Now, there's no ink in it, but it's a good pen. But Vaughn Glover is, I don't know how old he is, but I imagine Vaughn is, I'm going to guess Vaughn's over 40. Vaughn, are you over 40? Where are you? You're over 40, aren't you? 39. Yes, you are, boy.
Yeah. I am too. I was 39 last Friday. And, but, okay. But Vaughn Glover is in law school. Now, nobody knew it. I'm telling you now, most of you finding out about it. He's in law school. He works a full-time job, supports his family, and goes to law school. Now, he's suffering. He's burning midnight oil. He's burning wee hours of the morning oil. And he went through college that way. Now he's in law school that way. He'll go through law school that way. And one of these days, you mark it down. As sure as this building is here, and sure as there's a God in heaven, Vaughn Glover is going to be one of the finest attorneys in this Calumet region because he's got it. Now, what's he doing? While you're playing, he's working. While you're sleeping, he's studying. While you're having fun, he's paying the price. But the day is going to come one day when he's going to have fun while you pay the price. You see? Because that's the way success always is. The things in life that are worth anything for good and for God and the things that are right always come after you pay the price. Matter of building a church, the matter of having a baby, the matter of a career. For example, I have always been, in every church I've ever been to, a slow starter. I've never gone in and all of a sudden tried to double the attendance the first month. Never have. In this church, the first year I was here, we averaged about 7:15 in Sunday school. And the second year, we averaged about 7:15 in Sunday school. And the third year, we averaged about 7:15 in Sunday school. We didn't start off having a soul winning program and send a bunch of folks out soul winning that didn't know how to go soul winning. The first thing we did was try to lay the foundation. And I don't care what it is, brother, if you don't take time to lay the foundation, you'll be sorry one of these days. Now, you lay that foundation. I talked to a young man this morning. Has made a serious mistake. Serious mistake. He hasn't laid the foundation. Now he's going out in the work. He thinks he's going to do okay, but he's going to stumble and fall. Why? I don't care who you are. You need to lay every brick on top of every brick, and you need to lay foundation, and then you need to put the right kind of mortar, and you need to have the right kind of brick. There are no shortcuts to it. You see a great work. I don't care where it is. Somebody, if it stands, somebody has laid the foundation year after year after year after year. We have Hiles Anderson boys who out to preach. One fellow said, we're going to have 5,000 the first Sunday. And he did. And he had about 50 the second Sunday. He had 5,000. Oh, he didn't have 5,000, but he had quite a few. He rented his auditorium and got... what's her name? What's the gal's name? Used to, Anita Bryant to come and drink orange juice in front of everybody. And he had a big crowd. That's not the way you build a church, fellas. The way you build a church is you go out, win somebody, and bring them back in, and start training them to go out, win somebody, and bring them back in, start training them to go out, win somebody, and bring them back in. And you pour that foundation. You pour it right. Don't you go out there. One fellow's going to beat First Baptist Church Sunday. Well, at the start of church, and the first week, he had his little handful of people there. Okay, he said, in 3 years from now, we're going to beat First Baptist Church Sunday. Well, in 3 years, he didn't even have a church. Why? Because he wasn't willing to go the slow route. Now, I think you ought to go as fast as you can, but I think you ought to be sure that you put every proper ingredient in the structure as you're going. Now, everything enjoyable in life comes by suffering. The right things follow suffering. Now then, the wrong things precede suffering. I'll be honest with you. I've never taken a drink, but I expect it to be fun. I kid the fellas around here sometimes. I tell Randy. Randy Erickson makes me carrot juice every day. And he juices me some carrot or and leaves it in front of the door. I say, Randy, spike that a little bit, would you please? And this morning I got there, had a nail on the top of it. He said, is this what you mean by spiking the carrot juice? And I often kid about things like that. But I imagine it'd be fun to go to a disco. I can imagine it'd be a thrill. I'd be out of joint all over time I got through with that thing. But I can imagine that the world would be a little bit fun for a while. But mark it down. Everything that is wrong to do, you enjoy it now and you pay later. Everything that is right to do, you pay now and enjoy it later. And if I could reach out tonight and take everybody in this house, from the smallest child to the oldest adult, and if I could teach you one thing, you pay for what you get before you get it, and you'll be happier the rest of your life, and then it'll be a permanent happiness. It's a matter of dope and immorality and stealing and cheating. You see, everything has its price. And you can choose what you want in life's cafeteria. But there is nothing in life that has no price. That microphone costs something. This suit costs something. This pulpit costs something. This carpet costs something. These pews cost something. Brother John's shoes cost something. This table costs something. Everything in life has its price. Now, if you want to get it now, live it up now, have your fun now, and use your fun now, then you'll pay the price later. For a lifetime, you'll pay the price, or you'll say, I'll get character now. I'll get industry now. I'll get integrity now. I'll get virtue now. I'll wait until I'm supposed to have sex. I'll wait until I'm supposed to have enough money. You little guys that buy these new cars when you're juniors in high school, moms and dads, you're not very smart. You're not very smart. I don't mean to be unkind. I don't mean to make anybody mad, but too many of our boys are getting motorcycles when they're 15 years old. Say amen. You don't, even if you don't believe it, say amen. But my birthday was Friday. I mean, we're getting too many things. Our kids are using up most of life's enjoyments by the time they're 16 years old. There's nothing left. Why, listen to me. It's exciting when a young couple saves and works and buys an old used car for the first one. And then they save and work and they buy a better car and a better car and a better car. Till finally when you're 30 or 35 or 40 years of age, for the first time, you have a brand new car. But the average truth, the average person in this room tonight who's under 20 has used up 95% of all of life's enjoyments. I tell you what, I admire these young people that go to college and stay there and live in a dormitory with 16 others. Young people, no talking over here. Hey, young folks, that's enough talking. You hear what I've got to say. You need to hear what I've got to say. I'm saying, yeah, have fun now. Sit over there and hold your hands and talk to each other now. Go ahead. And then live a life of unhappiness and paying for the frivolities of your youth. I'll be honest with you. I'm tired of young people being appealed to differently from other older people. Young people are supposed to bear the yoke like older people are. Young folks are supposed to have duties like older people are. And I'm saying this. You young folks that are using up your enjoyments in life while you're young, you're going to be paying for it the rest of your life. I go to California every year, 4 or 5 times. I've never seen Disneyland. Never seen Knott's Berry Farm. I go to Arizona. I fly over Arizona year after year. Been to Arizona dozens of times. I've never seen Grand Canyon. I go to New York City. I've never seen Yankee Stadium. I go to Miami, Florida every year, several times. I've never seen Miami Beach or the Orange Bowl. You say, what are you doing? Why don't you see it? I'm saving it like it old. I want to save something. And if I never see it, I had to live with a joyful expectation that someday I'll get there. Than to use it all up while I'm young and have nothing to look forward to. Now listen to me. Everything has its price. You can choose what you want in life's cafeteria, yet there is no escaping payment. Mark Twain, when he wrote Tom Sawyer, Mark Twain, Huckleberry Finn, said this. Huckleberry Finn said, well then, what's the use of learning to do right when it's so troublesome to do right? And it ain't no trouble at all to do wrong. Now, what he said was right. It ain't no trouble to do wrong. You know why? Because you buy, now follow me carefully, you buy good from God. And God offers no credit. Hear me. I said you buy good from God. And God has no credit payment. No buy now, pay later. If you get it from God and it's good, you pay for it before you get it. But the devil has a credit plan. And when you buy evil and wrong, and sensuality and thrills and everything that the devil says, don't pay me now. You don't have to make your first payment till after Christmas. And you think that folks are doing you a favor. The devil says, don't pay me now, But you mark it down, buddy. Satan rewards now, but the payment does come. And God makes you pay now, and rewards come later. A perfect illustration is salvation. Salvation has a short, I'm sorry, not being saved has a short reward. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. I expect you can have more thrills not being saved than being saved. I was out in Las Vegas not long ago, stopped at the airport there, and those one-armed bandits said, play me, play me, play me. And boy, we do need some money here for a building program. And now, Doc, I'll be honest. I have never played a one-armed bandit. When I got to Reno, Nevada, they took me through that big hotel there, a room much bigger than this, full of those things. Now, I'll be honest. I'm confessing it. I wanted one time to try. You say, Brother Hyam, I'm shocked at you. No, you're not. You wanted to, too, when you were there, dummy. The only difference in you and me is that you did it. And the pastor that took me through, he said, Dr. Hyam, Brother Hyam, he said, do you want to play? And I said, of course I do. He said, I already have. Now, he says that at one time or so, I just wanted to do it, see how it felt. Now, but I'm saying, I want to. Oh, they used to ask old Dr. Bob Jones Sr. He said, did you ever want to divorce your wife? He said, no, sir. Never want to divorce my wife. He said, want to shoot her a few times, but never wanted to divorce her. But what God gives you, salvation, you have a short payment and a long reward. Sure. I'm on my way to glory. I'll be there. Good night. If I get 70, I'll be there in 15 years. 14 years and 363 days. I'll be there. If I get 80 years, I'll be there in 24 years and 363 days. Won't be long. But bless your little pea-picking heart, I got a heap of fun waiting on me when I get there. So I'll go ahead. I don't mind paying a little while now. But some of you folks are not, who are not saved, you're having your fun now. You better enjoy it because you're going to pay for eternity. When I was a boy, I've often told our young people this. When I was a boy, a young preacher, a young man, about 18, 19, 20, 21 years old, they had down in Texas a youth revival fad. They'd get the young preachers and all the churches to go together, have a big youth revival, and each preacher would get one sermon. Each young preacher would get one sermon. That's all we had. And when I started preaching, I had two sermons. One's on cigarettes, one's on smoking. One's on movies. Then on Sunday morning, I'd preach on movies. Sunday night, I'd preach against cigarettes. And the next week, I liked variety. So I'd preach in the morning on cigarettes and the night on a movie. Now, our folks didn't know any Bible, but nobody in our church smoked or went to the movies. But we had one sermon. That's all they had. So they'd get great crowds of people, 5,000 to 10,000 people in a big city park, Cole Park in Dallas. And they had a young man stand up there and preach on Monday night. Why, it wasn't dry behind his ears. There he was, preaching a great crowd, 5,000 and 10,000 people. And Tuesday night, another kid preacher. Wednesday night, another kid preacher. Thursday night, another kid preacher. Friday night, another kid preacher. Somebody said, Jack, you won't do that? I said, no, I don't. No, I don't. Well, why? I said, I'm not ready yet. I've got time to do that later on. Right now, I want to learn. And I do not want to use up my opportunities to preach to great crowds of people and get it over with and have it settle and never have it again. I said, what I want to do is lay the foundation. Let me preach first to a handful of people. Learn how to do it. I went down the country, pastored a little country church, 19 members, not a single outdoor, only one outdoor toilet in the entire church family. Only one. No indoor toilets. No telephone except one telephone. The fellow had it, was deaf, and couldn't hear it ring. Nobody could call him. way out in the country. No, only one car in the entire church family. One car, that's all. Everybody else said came to church in wagons and horseback and tractors. And there I was, 19, salary $7.50 a week. All the rest of the time, these young guys, come on, Jack, preach some big youth revivals with us. Let's live it up. Get you a white sport coat and some... alligator shoes and some red trousers and a red handkerchief and a red tie and learn a few sad stories and live it up. Nope, I said, I'll wear this suit I got from the college. The secondhand suit department at the college clothing room with a hole in the back. I had to reach, pull it down like that, and I preached so the whole choir couldn't see the hole and didn't see the breeches. And I'll just go ahead. Oh, why? I said, I'm not ready yet. Now then, follow me. Those five preachers. Fellow priest on Monday nights out of the ministry. He ripened too soon. And after you get too ripe, that's rotten. He ripened too soon. Fellow priest on Tuesday night is now a liberal professor in Duke University, does not even believe this Bible. He ripened too soon. Fellow priest on Wednesday night is a businessman down in Texas, not even a preacher. He ripened too soon. Fellow priest on Thursday night pastored a church in the Deep South and quit the ministry about 6 years ago, and he's out of the ministry. Fellow priest on Friday night pastored a church in Texas, not a tenth as big as this. Hey, what do you say? I'm saying while those guys were having their thrills, they're now paying for those thrills. And when they went down to a little church to start off, it seemed so anticlimactic. All the time, I was down in East Texas, laying a brick, laying another, laying another, laying another, laying another, laying another, one at a time. Now that means while you're young, you pay the price. Study! Now you know I'm for soul winning. And you know that I am for being zealous for the work of God. You know that. But any kind of zeal that is not built on hard study, it'll someday crumble when the test of time hits it. Now you pay the price now. Count the cost. Pay the price now. Too many young couples are buying too much on credit. Use the washateria. Buy your washing machine later. Too many young couples are starting off with house payments of $700 a month. I'm not kidding you. We got them right here in this room. Well, I'm mad at you. I'm just telling you that he won't, you know, muscles don't look too pretty over an empty checkbook. And you'd be surprised how that soft skin can become offensive to you when your checkbook is in the red. David Clyde. Know him? David Clyde. David Clyde was a baseball pitcher. Pitched in Houston, Texas. When he was a high school boy, Dallas, Texas Rangers, took him and put him immediately on the pitching mound. He won his first game. He was a sensation. But he's not pitching anymore. Somebody should have put that boy down in the minor leagues. Let him down, get down there. Let some pitching coach teach him how to take care of that arm. He's up there pitching the big leagues. Where is that left arm out? While other fellas were down. Nolan Ryan, for example, pitched a no-hitter. His fifth no-hitter yesterday. Nolan Ryan started off down at the bottom. Sandy Koufax was so wild he couldn't even hit the side of a barn at first. Became what I think is the greatest pitcher that ever took a baseball in his hand. But Sandy Koufax was 26 years old before he won his first game. Clint Hartung. Clint Hartung was a baseball player years ago from Hondo, Texas. He came to the big leagues, played for the New York Giants. Just a kid. He didn't last for 2 or 3 years. It's always that way. Shortcuts never work. Never do. Count the cost! And you find out what you want, and you pay for it, and then you get it! Take that JCPenney credit card and tear it up. Tear it up. I often mention, but I watch these two Dr. Streeters. See, you folks who are here now, they've always been doctors, but not to me. I watch them go through medical school. I watch them sacrifice. I watch them do without. I watch those men when they were young. I watch them go to school by day and work all night long and get 1 or 2 or 3 hours sleep a night, week after week, month after month, year after year. What they're doing? While other young couples were having fun, they're paying the price. Paying the price.
paying the price. And now they have what they bought. And it's paid for. That's why you shouldn't quit college and go out in the work. Finish it. Finish it. Pay your price. Pay your dues. And once in a while somebody asks me, Brother Howe, how long do you spend preparing your sermons? They'll say, I like a sermon now. How long do you spend preparing that sermon? I say, 35 years. The first years of my ministry, every morning, I studied 4 hours. 4 hours every morning. Every afternoon, went soul winning from 1 to 5. Every afternoon. 4 hours. 20 hours a week, nothing but study. I still have 80 sermon outlines in my files right now I prepared when I was a kid, 20, 21, 22 years of age, a kid preacher. I haven't used yet. I was looking through my outlines of the day, found 40 or 50 outlines I've got there, never used. Never used. I feel sorry for the preacher that preaches everything he knows every sermon. Don't ever tell what you know on any subject. Somebody might ask you a question when you get through. Save some of it. Pay the price. Pay it now. Work. Study. Diligence. Sure. There's not a 17-year-old boy in the world wouldn't like to quit high school and go to work and buy him a car. Not a one. Anybody that wants to go to high school is retarded. I started school when I was 5 and ended when I was, good night, how old was I? I started when I was 6. And I ended when I was in seminary. I never spent one day in school I enjoyed. I didn't like Greek. Never did like it. Alpha, beta, gamma always sound like cussing to me. I didn't like it. I didn't like trigonometry. I thought that's the dumbest thing in the world. I mean, ever since I got out of school, I haven't had to. I found X, but I haven't had to use it since I found it. I understand it. And that teacher stood up there with me before me, and she said, "Listen to this, boys and girls, young people. Listen to this. Are you ready?"
"Yeah, big deal. Yeah."
She'd say, "Listen to this. One dollar pili with the shortest sote. The drought of March is perishing the rote. It bothered every vein in sweet liqueur." We'd say, "She got problem." I never liked trigonometry. To me, it was always off on a tangent somewhere. I never liked trigonometry. Never liked it. To me, English grammar was my mother's mother. I didn't care about it. Biology. Didn't like biology. I didn't care about cutting up a frog. First place, frogs got a right to live much as I do. I was always, I was always afraid, Doc, there was something bigger than me. You know, so much bigger than me, I couldn't tell it was there. Like as much bigger than me as I am as a frog. And I was afraid somebody, whatever it was, would cut me up, wherever they go to school, you know. And never liked it. Did you ever think about that, really? I've often thought that maybe a tornado, maybe there's some big creature, a race of people, well, or creation, we don't, that are so much bigger than us, like we're bigger than an ant. And that maybe, did you ever go to an ant bed and blow it? I thought maybe there might be some big creature, but that's what a tornado was. They just blow, you know, at us. But I never liked all that stuff. I took chemistry for 2 days. And they expelled me from the class for the safety of the student body. I'm not saying you ought to like school. I'm saying you ought to go. I'm not saying you ought to like trigonometry. I'm saying you ought to learn it. I'm not saying you ought to like Greek. I'm saying you ought to learn it. I'm not saying you're like Chaucer and Bond or Peter with his short as sote, the dot of March is passing the rote. I'm not saying you're like it. I'm saying you're learn it. I'm not saying you're like algebra or solid geometry,
Plain geometry, I'm not saying, I'm saying you're learning. This old heathen generation is wrapped up on doing what is easy. And people say, well, that's hard. As if being hard is an excuse for not doing something. You're supposed to do that which is hard. Why? Because when you do that which is hard, you are paying a price of something you can enjoy for decades to come. You take the easy route and you'll pay the price for decades to come. You can have your fun now if you want to. You can have your new car now if you want to. Young people, you can have your sex now if you want to. You can have your big wardrobe now if you want to. You can have your pleasure now if you want to. But you will pay later with a lax character, poor work, ineffective career. You will pay for it. Or you can choose character now, integrity, chastity, by paying in advance with self-control, self-discipline, schedule, self-denial. And if you'll pay now with that, you will enjoy what you pay for your lifetime. By the way, the devil sends his bills regularly. You go the easy route, the lazy route. Somebody said, Brother Howes, if you didn't like algebra, why do we have to take it? You ought to take it because the teacher says take it. Well, I can't see any reason for it. It doesn't matter if you can see any reason for it or not. If somebody's smarter than you see some reason for it, then that's reason enough for you to take it. And even if it is not necessary, the diligence of sticking with it and doing something you don't want to do is worth it. And if algebra doesn't teach you anything you can use, it'll teach you character, and you can always use that. A job may not be worth your best, but diligence is worth your best in any job you do. By the way, the devil sends his bills regularly. His payments include interest, and the prime rate is higher now than it ever has been. The price on sin is higher tonight than it ever has been. When you pay first, and you work, and you study, and by the way, did you know that's what stealing is all about? Stealing is the inevitable end of wanting something you don't pay to get. And while Dr. Staub and Dr. Clare and Lively and Evans and others try to find the thief who steals the money out of the locker room, keep on going and find the thief that steals the answer off somebody else's paper. Either way, it's something that's not yours. So many times I've given that little skit about life's cycles. Don't rush out into another era of your life that you know you're not yet. Young ladies, you're in high school. Enjoy it. Be diligent about it. Don't reach out to things that they're not high schoolish. Wait till you get through high school. Ripen. Season. Go on to college. Then get married. Then have children. Don't reach out when you're 16, 17 years old and take something that's not for your era yet. You'll rob yourself of something you can enjoy now, and you'll use up something that'll not be there in the future when you get to it. Satan always sends his bills. And is, by the way, when you pay for it first, you never pay interest. Did you know that if you buy a car and pay for it 5 years, suppose the car costs $10,000 at 20% interest, did you know what you pay the first year in interest? $2,000. And if it's graduating interest, you will pay $5,000 in 5 years interest. The car will cost you $15,000.
Anything you get from God, you pay for it first and you never pay interest. Anything you get that's wrong to have, and the devil sells you, he doesn't want your money now, you pay for it later, and you always pay with the highest prime the world has ever seen. That isn't all. Satan will send his bill, not only you, he'll send his bills to your children and your loved ones. Listen to me for a minute. I don't get off on politics very often, but I want to say this. Mr. Reagan is right on this financial business. He's right. Mr. Reagan is saying this. Now, of course, the union crowd, they don't care as long as they get more money. They don't care. Forget the next generation. Let's live it up and give our kids a bunch of bills. But ladies and gentlemen, somebody in America someday has got to pay the national debt. Got to pay. Mr. Reagan is saying it's only fair for the generation that made it to pay it. And we ought to get our belts and tighten our belts and say, by cracky, we will pay the debts we've made. I don't know what the left-wing liberal pinks are doing. I don't know what the Kennedys are doing. I don't know what McGoverns are doing. They're saying, let's take it now and let's pay for the illegitimate babies and let's pay for the abortions of a bunch of harlots and let's pay for folks that won't work. And let's feed the people that are lazy because they're black or because they're brown or because they're yellow or because they're chartreuse or because they're maroon. Let's pay it. Because they may riot if we don't give them something from the budget. Well, bless God, let them riot. We've catered to specialized groups long enough. Let Mr. Jesse Jackson howl and huff and puff. That blows his house in. I mean, listen, I'll tell you how Mr. Kennedy can solve the poor problem. Close his dirty liquor business and give all his profits to a bunch of poor people. I don't like your preaching. Well, you just have to put up with it. It is crooked. It is wrong. I teach our staff. Anytime anybody in any department of First Baptist Church Hammond goes down and charges something to the First Baptist Church, and there's not money in our budget to pay for it. They are borrowing money on somebody else's credit. They're saying the First Baptist Church will pay this, and every staff member who goes down and buys something and is not in the budget ought to have to stay at this church till he pays off every dime of the obligations he made for somebody else to pay. And every American ought to bow his head in shame and say, God pity us. Our little babies in the nursery and babies that not yet born are going to have to pay for the national debt that America is accumulating. And it's about time we got somebody in the White House that's more concerned about being honest than popular. That's the whole thing. The whole thing is who's going to pay our debts. Am I going to pay it or is Melissa going to pay it? Am I going to pay it? Or is little Trent Smith, our only male grandchild, is he going to pay it? It's not fair. It's not fair. It's crooked. It's dishonest. For us, because somebody is striking. Yeah, I want my money. I'm not getting my check. I'm going to have to pay for my own abortion. Now, why don't you find out what causes those things? We're scared to death of everybody. Scared to death. Scared of Russia. Scared of North Vietnam. And I'm not a racist, not an ounce of racist blood in me, but we're scared of the black people. And I want to say this. Every black person in this room tonight, if you don't agree with me, you're not right with God. Your race has no more right than any other race has to spend Uncle Sam's money. None. You say, oh, we've lived in poverty long enough. Honey, you ought to see where I used to live. I mean, the ghettos of Chicago look like the Gold Coast compared to where we used to live. I was checking out of a Howard meat market a few years ago. The old gal right in front of me happened to be black. By the way, no matter what color you are, you can just take my preaching like anybody else takes it.
Oh, so you're racist. No, I'm not. I'm against anybody being lazy and living off somebody else's work. I don't care if you're black, white, maroon, chartreuse, or Polish. I got behind this gal. She's checking out a Howard Meat Market. I bought 5 pounds of hamburger, I think it was. That's what I was checking for buying. This old gal, she had porterhouse. Filet mignon. Chartreuse Brian. You never saw such stuff in your life. And you know what you paid for it with? Food. And I said to her, enjoy it. Should I gift wrap it for you? She said, what are you talking about? I said, it's my money. You're eating it with. And here I'm eating a hamburger. Bunch of fat cats. Bunch of fat cats. This color television set in the house and taking your money and my money and buying, getting free lunches in schools with it. I was two blocks from here one time. Lady said, she called me and said, we're up against it. Up against it. She said, we got to help. Went down there. When I walked in, a little kid was sitting down in the middle of the floor watching the color television set, eating boiled ham sandwich. And I said, what's your trouble? She said, we're just about on poverty level. I said, what is it? She said, we don't have enough money to make our television set payment. And I said, ma'am, last time I had boiled ham was when Jesus cast those hogs in the water. And here are your little kids eating a boiled ham sandwich, and you want me to pay your television set payment for you. That's the way this whole country is. We're scared to death. Congress is scared to death. We're the one that... I'm not going to preach tonight. I'm just going to gripe for a while. We'd have won that stupid Vietnam War if we hadn't been cowards. You heard me say this before. You turn me on there. You heard me say this before. We shouldn't have let little North Vietnam scare us to death. Turn me up. What would you have done? I'd have drawn a line right here, right there. And I'd have said, okay, Mr. Communist, you ain't crossing that line. You say, well, Brother House, what would you have done if they'd have crossed it? I'd have thrown a rock at them. Well, what would you have done then? If that didn't succeed, I'd have gotten a slingshot and hurled a stone at them. If that didn't work, I'd have gotten me a BB gun. Air rifle. And shot him. That didn't work. I'd get me a .22 rifle. Blow their brains out. Oh, you say, violence, 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 violence. Oh, shut up. If that wouldn't work, I'd have gotten a bazooka. If that didn't work, I'd get me a machine gun. If that didn't work, I'd drop a bomb. If that didn't work, I'd drop a bigger bomb. If that didn't work, I'd take every bomb we got in the whole United States of America. And by the way, somewhere in there, North Vietnam would have withdrawn. I've done the same thing in Afghanistan. One dear lady made me one of those. It's my birthday. No joke. You in my study right now, on my sofa, one of the prettiest Afghanistans you ever saw in your life. Right now. She made it for me. Let me have fun. This is my birthday. And she went to Afghanistan. Well, I did sure have done more than Carter did. You know what he did, don't you? He said, now, Russia, you watch it. He said, if you go in Afghanistan, we're not going to play in the Olympics. Boy, that scared the Russians, didn't it? Yeah, one, you cross that line, we won't run a 100-yard dash with you. We won't have a shot put either. Oh, but that scared them to death. You see, we're scared. And so that's the only difference in a liberal
and a conservative when it comes to finances in America is the liberal so scared of what's going to happen, he's afraid to do what's right. But you mark it down. You let these left-wing pinks keep on piling our national debt high and living. I don't care who you are. You live above your means, it's going to catch up with you. I don't care who you are. Listen, you ask these guys on this platform. You ask the folks that work for me. I'm not a mean man. Really, I'm not. Except when it comes to finances. And you guys, every one of you, will attest to the fact that when you have overstepped your budget, I mean, the wrath of Almighty Hiles is going to fall. And you know it's the truth. Because as long as I've got breath to breathe, we won't have much money here. Because we get it, I'm going to spend it. But I'll bind you one thing. I'm going to fight to the finish to see to it that when the last breath I breathe, that this church is in the black. And I will not have taken you into some debt because I wanted it, that your children and your grandchildren will have to pay. I'm saying we're going to live within our budget. And if we don't live, the churches all across this nation tonight have not lived within their budgets. Brother, you know what I'm talking about. All across this nation tonight. That's what I hate about this buying a house now and having graduated payments. Pay $500 a month now and $600 3 years from now. And, hey, I don't like that. I don't like it. But I don't care what you are. Young people, getting married, live within your budget. Middle-aged couples, live within your budget. Churches, live within your budget. Schools, live within your budget. Businesses, live within your budget. Congress, hey, Senate, President, live within our budget. All over this building. All over this building tonight. There. People who are receiving bills from Satan of debts incurred by loved ones who wanted to have fun now and pay later. And I'm not just talking about financial bill. I'm talking about heartache. Many a child sits in this room tonight with no daddy at home. Many a teenager sits in this house tonight with no daddy at home because daddy wanted to have his fun while he was young and he paid the price and he's gone somewhere, but the bills still come in to the family. And the little widow or the divorcee is paying the price. If you have your fling while you're young, the bills will come in. And they'll come into you, and they'll come in to your loved ones. Did you know that most all of the counseling... Where's Brother Sully? You're not here. I was going to use an illustration. Do you know most all the counseling that I do in First Baptist Church Hammond? 90% of it. I do with people who bought now, are bought first, and are paying now. If you have your fling while you're young, the bills will come in. And they'll come into you, and they'll come in to your loved ones.